Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network. September now, man. Morning comes and you know that you wanna stay. Long weekend. Hot here. It was over 100 degrees here on the West Coast. I mean, at the beach, it was over 100. Okay, that does not happen. Yeah, it was disgusting. Let's continue tonight. Come on, celebrate. That's how we do. Sometimes you gotta stay in. And you know where I live. Yeah, you know what we is. Sometimes you gotta stay. Welcome to my house, baby. So, welcome on a Tuesday. Short week, right? Everybody loves it. So I spent the weekend, I spent it working on post-traumatic winning stuff. And I'm writing a script, right, so that I can make a movie. But I've got to do I've got to learn how to do that. So I'm going to turn my garage into a video set. Yeah, how about that? So I was learning how to do that. And so then I'll, like the movie that I've made, it'll include, instead of me just doing kind of a voiceover. Yeah, how about that? That's like a Hollywood term. Yeah, that's somebody who does voice work behind audio, behind whatever. I will go ahead and I'll actually be starring in it. How about that? Now, I'm 62 years old. I'm not real fired up about that, but it's something that you have to do. So anyway, so I was learning that. And then it dawns on me, why don't I I was on the Twitter yesterday, and I'm not sure because I don't normally get on the Twitter. So I see a tweet from Ken and Betty Rogers, and the tweet says that their next movie the music is now being applied to it. And so I thought, well, why the hell have I not, like, reached out to Ken and Betty for advice relative to video stuff. So then I did it. So if you haven't seen their first documentary called Bravo, Common Men, Uncommon Valor, I absolutely watch it. So, yeah, I'm in the video production business. How about that? But I'm excited to do it because of I just continue to have crazy experiences with post-traumatic winning. And it is as right can be. And the magical experiences of showing people that there is a path that they can walk and then seeing them go down that and then seeing them help other people is, like, as you guys know from listening, there's no experience like that on the planet. So so the weekend was filled with that. But it was hot. I'm not going to lie to you. It was hot out here. So I dialed it. It was good to stay inside. Now, I don't know. Grant is supposed to join me this morning, but I don't know if he's actually going to. So that's what's going to happen. And then Thursday's National Suicide Day. So I'm trying to do something that would be appropriate for that day. Now, I'm not exactly sure what that is. So if you have any suggestions, but what I want to do is I want to talk to guys who, you know, told me that they've considered suicide. And I want to, and what's cool about what I do is I don't have any qualms about going there and talking about it. And with me, they tend not to have any qualms about going there either. So I'll probably see if I can get them on and talk about suicide from their perspective. So, and then the case against suicide, why not to kill yourself? And I will tell you this, what I've concluded, and this is based on my conversation with people. So why not kill yourself? Well, if the only thing I know is out there is a path to endurance, at some points, endurance gets really hard. And if the rest of my life, what's out there for me is to be medicated and go to therapy every week, and that's how I endure, I think that's really difficult. So that's why at the end of the show every day, I remind everybody who listens, don't be afraid to go out there and change somebody's life. Because they need their lives changed. And look, and you don't need to be a PhD. Just tell them the truth. And part of the truth is this path that they can walk. But you know what? A lot of people don't know that that path is there. I didn't. Right? A little bit of self-discovery on my part. And then people helping me along the way. And then me collecting all this and pushing it back out there. And so, yeah. So to me, and that's the power, you know, of this whole thing, is that suicide, if all it is, the rest of my life's going to be about is enduring this pain, that's rough, man. And when does suicide, for people that have gone through, you know, terrific trauma. And I'll use Elizabeth Smart as an example. You know, 14 years old, raped every day for 9.5 months. I mean, would we all forgive her? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. And so why would she not kill herself? And so if the only thing that is available to you is endurance, then I think that's hard. I think that's absolutely hard. And so to me, without this is Elizabeth Smart. I think.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because at the end of the day, bad things happen and we don't...
Okay, so what she says, I want people to walk away with hope at the end of the day. Now, I would tell you that is the key concept, is that they have hope. And so what is the hope based on? Is it based on something rational, or is it just like, well, I hope things that get better, which to me is, I don't want to say it's irrational, it's optimistic, but is it linked to anything concrete that you know of? And the answer to that is no. I'm hoping it's better. I hope that maybe time heals this wound, which is a lie, right? I hope that. So, but if I hope, based on the fact that I've met people that have gone down this path that they described to me before, and I'm trying to walk that path, and I hope I'm successful. Now, that hope's based on a concrete example and a rational belief. And that's, to me, where you get into the point where you can turn people away from taking their own life, because the rational part of suicide is that it makes the pain go away. And if I don't know that there's a path for me, and all I have is this hope, and the hope's not based on anything rational, at some point I get tired of the medication. At some point, other bad things, you know, happen in my life. At some point, I get tired of going to group therapy, and I get tired of going to individual therapy because it's not getting better. Okay? So I'll back this up and start it. Okay? So this is Elizabeth Smart, and this is what I play in post-traumatic wave.
I want people to walk away with a sense of hope because at the end of the day, bad things happen and we don't deserve them to happen. But that doesn't mean that our life is over. That doesn't mean that we need to give up or that we can never be happy again. You can go through hell and you can still have a happy ending, and you can reclaim your life. You can decide who you are. I hope that people come out of it feeling like that gives them the courage, the strength to keep on fighting, to keep on going. Life is worth living.
All right, now I want you to listen to her voice change as she, in the next thing she says. At the end of it, her voice will change dramatically.
That night, as he did every night the last 9 months, Brian David Mitchell raped me, but it was the last time. Why did I tell you this story? Those posters on the wall, the children like me, the others who have it worse, the ones who don't come home. I wanted to tell you, as someone who has been through hell, that there still is hope. Find a miracle, hold on to it, and keep going. I'm not cracked. I'm not shattered. I am Elizabeth Smart.
So, we all would forgive her, right, for being a suicidal disaster, but she's not. And so, but again, I think though, is your hope based on something rational that you know? And I think that's what's truly transformational about what I do about post-traumatic winning. And that is it shows people the fourth path. There is a way that you can do this. And these are the rules. They're not easy, right? But holy shit, didn't know that was there. And so what I want to do is bring people on that I know that have lived that and have walked that path. And so, that's on Thursday this week. So I'm giving that some thought. If you have any suggestions, don't be afraid to email me. So that's going on. So I'm not sure if there'll be a second hour today because, Grant said that he probably could, but he had something else that he had to be at or something. But I mean, come on, it's like midnight in Taipei. Like, what the hell, man? shut the karaoke bar down and go home, Grant, for God's sakes. But anyway, so we'll see what happens. The what else is going on? I tried to record Lynch, Kenny Cosentini talking about, I wanted to ask them all three questions, but I wanted to do it separately so you could hear the difference in what they said. And these are the three questions. Do you think that the sentiment expressed in the Atlantic article that's attributed to the president is widely held among the political elites of the nation? So, they have no way of knowing whether the president said that or he didn't say that. Okay. And so I wouldn't even ask him that. The next question was, but is that a position that they believe is held by members of this country that are extremely wealthy? Would they ever allow their kid to serve in the military? What percentage of them have kids that do? Not very many, I can tell you that. So they're the ruling class of this country. They send their kids to Ivy League universities, service to the nation. What? So it's not like we've never heard that before. And it is a entitled person's point of view. So that was the first question. You know, next question. Do you think that this issue is something that will sway anybody? So, and essentially what we're talking about is you know, what are conservatives? Are they going to hear that and say, okay, I'll vote for Joe Biden. That's it. That's the straw. I don't think so. But I wanted to hear what they would say. And then, liberals, all it does is confirm what they already believe, right? So, do you believe it'll sway anybody? But what about that part of the electorate that's quote unquote undecided? That sliver of people that is in the middle that ultimately elect the president. Do you think this issue sways any of that? And then what is John Kelly's responsibility in all this? John Kelly, 4-star general that then moves into the political realm as a political appointee at the Department of Homeland Security, then as the chief of staff. So does John Kelly behave like a Marine Corps general officer that he is, or does he behave like a politician? And I mean, there's been a pretty healthy discussion about generals and their responsibility. And that more and more generals are more and more political all the time. Now, contrast that with a article that was in the Boston Globe about Joseph Dunford over the weekend. And I'll put this along with the Elizabeth Smart, but I'll put the link to this article. It was in the Boston Globe. And first of all, he looks younger. he's going down the same road Neller went down, which is reversing the aging trend. So, no, he looks great. Retired in Massachusetts now. And so here's what he says. Dunford and his wife, Ellen, have three children, who he checks on regularly, as well as his mother and father, who are still alive. His father is a Marine veteran of the Korean War, served 40 years with the Boston Police Department, and rose to the position of deputy superintendent of the Boston Police. He's a senior fellow at the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University, where he mentors national security and intelligence professionals. He works with several nonprofit organizations, including being the chairman of Semper Fi Fund and America's Fund, which provides lifetime support for combat wounded members of the U.S. military and their family. He sits on the boards of Lockheed Martin and a private equity company in New York. He's also the co-chair of a congressionally funded bipartisan study group on the future of Afghanistan. But in the article, he's asked about the president's, the comments that are attributed to the president. He's also asked about other current events. And the article says this: Dunford said his philosophy is to behave in public the same way I did on while on active duty. I feel I should not engage in partisan politics. The implications of any public comment on the president or his administration, he said, could complicate the job of Army General Mark Milley, his successor as chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and another Massachusetts native. I've got to let the chairman be the chairman, and there can only be one chairman, Dunford said. After a pause, he smiled and repeated a quote from Army General Omar Bradley, a hero of World War II. Quote, "The best service a retired general can perform is to turn in his tongue along with his suit and to mothball his opinions." And so, but the article is interesting because while he doesn't talk about current political affairs, he does talk about something that we talk about here on All Marine Radio, and that is the post-World War II rules-based system that the United States and the United Kingdom and other nations set up that has allowed you know, free nations, you know, to prosper in a prolonged era of peace. So the article goes on to say this: to Dunford, the international institutions and agreements that followed the devastation of World War II, the United Nations, NATO, and the Bretton Woods Economic Agreement, prominent among them, provided a durable framework for global stability that strong U.S. leadership has helped maintain. Quote, "And while some believe that there needs to be some changes in the world order, what I would argue is that we had a vision for what a world order ought to be after World War II. That structure, that order, if you will, brought about peace and security for a long time. The president is doing it his way. I'm not going to, as a military leader, comment on how the president is approaching it. But I would argue that the value of these relationships is critical in the future as it has been in the past. If the U.S. doesn't lead in developing these structures that can advance our diplomatic, our economic, our intelligence, and our security interests, somebody else will take the lead doing that. And there are really only two candidates right now that would step in to take a leadership role in that regard. One is Russia, the other is China. And so the question I would ask, which of those two countries do you think ought to be helping establish the international laws, norms, and standards of the future? Dunford described China as the most formidable adversary we will face in the years ahead. And an emboldened military power that is increasingly aggressive in the South China Sea and exhibiting might makes right mindset. Quote, "We shouldn't look at this as an inevitable Cold War. That's not the picture I'm painting. But what I do believe is that our military capabilities and our ability to demonstrate our alliance commitments will certainly be deterring to China in the region." So, so I will post the whole article there. So, and then the third question was, what would their advice be to General Kelly? There's been from liberal institutions that believe that General Kelly is at the root of those comments. You know, they're saying that it's his moral obligation to the nation to come out and take on the president publicly. And then for people that don't believe he said it, you know, it's his moral obligation to come out and deny it. And then there's others who say, look, as a military four-star, he has to decide if he wants to be a politician or if he wants to enjoy, you know, being a retired general officer. But you can't do both. You can't do both. If he wants to be Mr. Kelly, so be it. So, anyway, interesting stuff. And that narrative dominated much of the news late last week and into the weekend. So, good morning to you on this Tuesday. The United States Marine Corps Band makes this morning official. Good morning. This is dedicated to everybody. You know, Labor Day is not a big deal anymore. Did you notice that? You know, we say, oh, it's Labor Day. Well, you know, what was the big deal about Labor Day? And I think Labor Day has gone the route of the middle class, our dwindling middle class. And I think that's pretty sad. You know, the great middle class in this country is, you know, based a lot on the on a lot of blue collar workers, and those jobs have shrank in this country. And they shrank, and they shrank, and they shrank, and they shrank, and they shrank. And I think did you see a lot of speeches in the news about the about labor? Yeah, I didn't see one. You know, I didn't see one over the weekend. And so, you know, for everybody out there who works and for everybody who's concerned about the middle class in this country, this is all dedicated to you, because there was a day and age in this country where, you know, Labor Day was a big deal. It doesn't seem to be that way anymore. And I think that's a problem. So, dedicated to everybody who works hard to put food on the table. And I think the United States has lost focus of the middle class. Now, it's an election year, and everybody's going to say they haven't. But if you look at the way jobs leave this country, in my opinion, they have. So, dedicated to everybody who works their ass off out there, right, and doesn't get a whole lot of help and makes it work. So, we love you.
We have fought. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Neller, I had a conversation with him over the weekend. I had to get him to redo a couple of quotes for me that I've heard him say, but I can't find that I want to include in post-traumatic winning. So, I mean, I could say, so the Commandant said, but not as powerful as when you hear him say it himself. And one of them was 83% of the Marines that killed themselves have never been deployed. And yet, when we talk about when Marines think of PTSD, they immediately think of combat. And if there's one epiphany that I've had, and it's a no-shit epiphany, it's how much sexual violence and how much child abuse is resident in our culture and certainly in the military. It's amazing. And then the other thing was a conversation that he and I had about drinking, and it was an impromptu conversation because it didn't start. I didn't think it would go that way, but it was at the end of an interview, and I just said, "Hey, if you could give, we got about 2 minutes. If you could give Marines one piece of advice, what would it be?" And he said, "Stop drinking." And I said, "What?" And he went on to say, "If you could see what I see," he said, "you wouldn't react like that." So I had a conversation with him about that over the weekend. So anyway, time for us to check the weather here on a Tuesday. Grant just informed me he will not be home from the bars. And so he will not be joining us. So we'll do the news and then I'm out of here. There's an email. Hey, Mac. Would you play us some of the other stuff that you have in Post-Traumatic Winter? I found the Elizabeth Smart thing awesome. You know what? I'll do a little bit of that as soon as we do the news. I'll play you some of the audio that I use in Post-Traumatic Winter. How about that? Yeah, so it won't be a complete loss of a day. All right, so the weather. Oops, wrong music. Currently, it is partly sunny in 78 in Quantico. It is cloudy and 79 down the coast at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune. In 29 Palms, California, it is cloudy and 93. Now, you don't see that very often. Cloudy 93. Cloudy and 71 at Marine Corps Base Camp Pendleton. It is dark, cloudy, and 75 at Camp Smith in Hawaii. It is dark, cloudy, 81 in Okinawa. And I don't know what, I don't know how. I don't know what the temperature is in Afghanistan. in Western Iraq. You know what? I think I'm going to shit can Afghanistan and Iraq from the weather. I mean, there's hardly any Marines in either place. Marines are in Kuwait. So I'm going to have to do a little research. Right now it's dark, clear, and 104 in Iraq. And at the home of All Marine Radio, the Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of Southern California, it is cloudy and 73 degrees. Looking for a high today of 81, 85 tomorrow, 86 on Thursday, 86 on Friday, and 82 on Saturday. So it'll stay warm here in Southern California. That is a look at your weather here on a Tuesday that feels like a Monday. And we'll check news headlines. And then you'll hear some more audio cuts from Post Traumatic Winning. So, by request. So, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We used to get together every week. She's been home from her last deployment for months now, and I haven't seen her once.
He's just been different since he got back from Iraq. One minute he's ready to go, and the next he doesn't want anyone around.
The nightmares are back and seem to be getting worse. Shouldn't he be sleeping better after all these years?
A lot of people don't understand what veterans go through during their service or when they come back. And that's okay.
But everyone can help.
You can make a difference in the life of a veteran.
You stood by us when we were in uniform, so stand by us now.
Like my brother did, when he wouldn't take no for an answer.
Like my wife did, when she asked the right questions.
Like my friend did, when she made the call.
Take a stand for those who served our country.
If you're a veteran in crisis, or know one who is, the Confidential Veterans Crisis Line is here for you. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's service members and veterans are strong, forged out of bravery, sacrifice, and duty. They are diverse, unique, from all corners of the country, and thanks to their common experience, a family for life. But whether they served in lands far away or communities close to home, some of these men and women may face difficult times or even crisis. But sometimes reaching out for help can be the most challenging and worthwhile mission of all for veterans, service members, reserve, and National Guard. Thankfully, friends, family, and communities are standing by their service members and veterans now more than ever. We're all in this together. When you recognize something isn't right, make the call to the Veterans Crisis Line or Military Crisis Line. During times of crisis, reach out and call. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 or chat online at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
Hi, I'm Gary Sinise. Our veterans put everything on the line to protect our freedom. We may never be able to repay them for their sacrifice, but we can show them just how much we appreciate all they've done. You can help by simply sharing your time, lending a warm smile, a supportive hand, or a sympathetic ear to someone who needs it. Everyone can do something to make veterans know just how much we appreciate their service. Please visit www.volunteer.va.gov. What will you do?
We all share a common journey. We wanted to serve our country, stand for something bigger than ourselves, and protect the things we love. Although we were ready to face any mission, help those in need, and make a difference, for some of us, coming home was more of a challenge than we expected. In the service, we had each other's backs. But as veterans, it can sometimes feel like we're all alone, even when surrounded by our loved ones.
If you're a veteran or service member in crisis, or know one who is, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Chat at veteranscrisisline.net or text 838-255.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn.
Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
To the news we go, and there's a bunch of it. You know, headline. I don't know, where is this from? Picture of the president, Secretary of Defense. Stars and Stripes. Headline, Trump says troops love him, attacks top brass who want to do nothing but fight wars. Now, that's unfair, and it's not true. Okay, the problem isn't that they only want to fight wars. The problem is they won't stand up and tell you the truth, that they don't want to fight them. That's the problem. Okay, so maybe you should tell them, it's okay to tell me the truth. Don't tell me what you think I want to hear. Tell me the truth. That's the kind I need. I need more maverick generals. But let's see. So that's in the news, right? So the president pushing back on the allegations that he said that very unflattering things about the American military. Also from Stars and Stripes. A Philippine leader pardons U.S. Marine in killing of a transgender woman. The Philippine president pardoned a U.S. Marine on Monday. This is an Associated Press story. In a surprise move that will free him from imprisonment in the 2014 killing of a transgender Filipino woman who sparked anger in the former American colony. Foreign Secretary Teodoro Losin said in a tweet that President Rodrigo Duterte granted an absolute pardon to Lance Corporal Joseph Scott Pemberton to do justice, but did not elaborate. A left-wing human rights group, Carpetan, immediately condemned the pardon as despicable and shameless mockery of justice and servility to the U.S. imperial interest. Pemberton, 25, was convicted of homicide, has been serving a prison term of 6 to 10 years for the killing of Jennifer Laud in a motel in Ilongapo City, northwest of Manila. Presidential spokesman Henry Roque, who once served as a lawyer for Laud's family, said the presidential pardon would mean the immediate release of Pemberton from detention. Pemberton's lawyer, Rowena Garcia Flores, expressed relief over Duterte's move and said Pemberton was willing to apologize even belatedly to the Laud family. Last week, the regional trial court in Ilongapo City, which handled Pemberton's case, ordered authorities to release him early from detention for good conduct, but Laud's family appealed the order blocking the Marine's early release. The court order rekindled perceptions that American military personnel who run afoul of Philippine laws can get a special treatment under the Allies' Visiting Forces Agreement. Pemberton, an anti-tank missile operator from New Bedford, Massachusetts, was one of thousands of American and Philippine military personnel who participated in joint exercises in the Philippines in 2014. He and a group of Marines were on leave after the exercise and met Laud and her friends at a bar in Ilongapo, a city known for its nightlife outside of Subic Bay, a former U.S. Navy base. Laud was later found dead, her head slumped in a toilet bowl in a motel room where witnesses said she and Pemberton had checked in. A witness told investigators that Pemberton said he choked Laud after discovering she was transgender. He was then convicted. So that has not, that has been in the news on a relatively, or was in the news on a relative, regular basis. Here's a story from the Associated Press. Veterans are divided about reports Trump disparaged the military. So that has been in the news all weekend. The president denying that he said those things, other people maintaining that he did, and the subsequent fallout from that. A U.S. service member was wounded in an al-Shabaab attack in Somalia. The service member is in stable conditioning with non-life-threatening injuries, an AFRICOM spokesman said. Al-Shabaab militants fired mortar rounds and used a vehicle as a roadside bomb, according to U.S. Africa Command. The attack happened near Jana Kabdale, about 300 miles south of Mogadishu, where U.S. troops were in an advisory mission with Somali forces. At least one Al-Shabaab fighter was killed during the attack. So that is in the news. From the Wall Street Journal, there's a number of interesting stories this morning. U.S. stocks continue their tech decline. Both the Dow and the S&P 500 are down. Next story. Interesting. U.S. military has offered new bases in the Pacific. Palau invites the Pentagon's presence at an unspecified joint-use facility, marking an advance of U.S. efforts to put pressure on China. So this is not a big deal, and this is one of the things I wanted to talk to Grant about, and maybe he'll come on tomorrow. The Republic of Palau has asked the Pentagon to build ports, bases, and airfields on the island nation, officials say, offering to boost the U.S. military expansion in Asia as Washington aims to counter China. Now, this is something Grant's talked about, you know, for a long time. Now, I will tell you, and this is the second incident that I would tell you is a huge, huge event. The first one is the Brits and their decision to eliminate Huawei from building part of their 5G infrastructure. So, you know, that Grant has educated us on, whether it be the Solomon Islands or the Palaus, that the Chinese come with cash and they're looking to, you know, displace the United States as the nation that people can rely on for money and then, you know, and expand their sphere. So So interesting. So when you see, you know, a map of the Pacific, you know, Palau is, if you know where the Philippines are, right? You know where Singapore is, right? You know where Malaysia is, right? Palau sits kind of right behind the Philippines, right? So, and kind of between the Philippines, at the southern end of the Philippines, but further to the west, okay? So it sits east of Guam. And so the Chinese efforts to break what many call, you know, that first island chain, the containment that runs from Korea to Japan, down to Taiwan, to the Philippines, to Australia. To break that chain, you need places like Guam, the Mariana Islands, Palau, and Indonesia, and then you go further west. So, it's not a small deal. So that kind of breaking news. The Wall Street Journal, the only one writing about that this morning. So, interesting story. Another headline from the Wall Street Journal, pretty interesting. Control of the Senate to ride on Trump's fortunes. Subheadline, as Biden continues to lead in presidential polls, Democrats express confidence in holding their House majority. So we will see what happens. Another kind of interesting part of the whole COVID event is there's companies that if you're in the home fitness business, if you're in the home anything business, I think, your fortunes have gone up, right? Peloton, which is a stationary bike with a TV on the handlebars, and that TV links you into classes and other groups of riders and things like that to do fitness on, they're one of the companies. So this article about Peloton riding a wave of COVID-19, adding products and cutting prices to their top-of-the-line products. Peloton will reduce the base price to $1,895, and that's a reduction of over $2,200. How about that? So that interesting little story from the Wall Street Journal. Another story. Bad story. Search is underway for a sailor missing from the USS Nimitz. The USS Nimitz and a guided missile cruiser, the USS Princeton, are currently searching the North Arabian Sea for a sailor missing, according to a brief statement. The sailor had been listed as duty status whereabouts unknown aboard the Nimitz, read the Sunday statement. The sailor's name is being held in accordance with U.S. Navy policy. Updates will be provided as they become available. The USS Nimitz and its battle group is operating just outside the Persian Gulf since late July. Now, just mind you this, that there has been, you know, the disappearances where people essentially hide aboard their ship. And so that's the, you know, initially listed as duty station whereabouts unknown, because in order to have a man overboard, somebody's got to see somebody go overboard. So when somebody doesn't show up, normally you see this dust one status, which is dust is duty status whereabouts unknown. And so again, and then they've ultimately turned up on the ship. One guy about a couple weeks later, right, hit out in boiler rooms and came out at night and, you know, kind of, you know, marauded through the ship, and then they ultimately found him. So, you know, hopefully the same thing is going on aboard the Nimitz now, and that they'll find him. So, people can jump off ships. The flight deck is pretty tightly controlled. If somebody goes off the flight deck, you know, because of like jet wash or something like that, that's pretty apparent to the people that they're working with. So the flight deck pretty tightly held. But if somebody wants to kill themselves by jumping over at sea. There's sponson watches that are supposed to be out there watching for stuff like that. They don't always see everything. And then there's cameras on the exterior of the ship for just this reason. So we'll keep our fingers crossed that that somebody is just struggling and is hiding aboard the ship. The six large companies have been awarded contracts to start work on large unmanned surface vehicle. The Navy today awarded six companies contracts to take the first steps in determining what the service's large unmanned surface vessel will look like. After adjusting its acquisition approach to adhere to congressional code, the Navy today announced $42 million contracts for an list of companies. Navy anticipates companies finishing work by August of 2021, but options could extend the work till May of 2022. The contract's total value is worth $59.5 million. The studies are designed to provide robust collaboration with government and industry to assist in the maturation of platform specifications. So, yeah, large unmanned surface vehicle. Robot war. From the Marine Corps Times, a 53 made an unannounced landing in Sneed's Ferry, North Carolina, I believe on Friday. So it made a precautionary emergency landing after it caught fire. The Daily News in Jacksonville reported the incident took place on Thursday afternoon. Officials said the CH-53 reported no injuries after being forced out of the air because of fire. The helicopter landed in a field near Sneed's Ferry, about 50 miles north of Wilmington. So that's a good story, man, right? Whenever you can get it on the deck and everybody walks away, that's a good deal. You know, I've been wondering about this next story. So here's a story. Before he was a Hall of Fame pitcher, Tom Seaver was an expert rifleman in the United States Marine Corps. So you see a picture of Tom Seaver as a 17 or 18-year-old kid. And stamped headquarters, recruit training battalion, first recruit training battalion, Marine Corps Recruit Depot, Paris Island. So Tom Seaver reported, I'm not sure when, but the part of his service record that I can see, he was assigned to 2nd Lamb Battalion in Fresno, California. So he was a supply guy, Delta Battery. And so he was joined the reserves at the age of 17, 18. And then from there got transferred around the country. But I wondered about that. Why is there no picture of Tom Seaver as a Marine? Did his family not own one? But it's conspicuously absent in all the images of Tom Seaver is one in which he is in his Marine attire. The top five stories in Early Bird. I think that was top five stories in Early Bird. Number one, the Navy is searching for a sailor in the North Arabian Sea. Two, respect for the troops. Military sacrifice becomes an election friction point. And what everybody's going to say, right? You know, we love the troops, support the troops, all the rest of that stuff. But again, the sentiment that was expressed in that article, I mean, don't listen to what they say. Listen to what their family does. Would they ever steer anybody to the military? Answer is no. And that is our ruling class. What percentage of people serving at the high end in state government, at the high end of the federal government, what percentage of them have people in their family that have joined the U.S. military? And it is extremely small. I would dare say a fraction of what it is in the country in particular. So I don't, you know, that sentiment, they may not say it, But they would never have anybody serve in the military. I mean, they're the elites of this country. They don't do the heavy lifting. It would be like the, it would be the family outcast that would like join the Marine Corps or do something crazy like that, right? They just don't say it, right? Things that don't get said politely in public, right? And then they'll stand up and everybody will say the right thing. In a reversal, the president has said that Stars and Stripes funding won't be cut. I don't, like, what do we need Stars and Stripes for? Do we need a uniquely military paper? Because I think most people, nobody I know reads Stars and Stripes. We used to read it when we were overseas, and you could pick it up, and you could see sports scores in the back. You know, you'd read what was going on, and that was your only form of communication. Now, if you've got a cell signal, you know, you can read. So I don't know. Does it still? And I didn't see it. I never saw like stacks of Stars and Stripes in either Iraq or Afghanistan. So I think it exists now mostly in electronic form, if not universally in electronic form. And if you have access to the electronic media, what do you need Stars and Stripes for? You'll get your media where you get your media. So I'm not a Stars and Stripes hater because I start the program with it, but, and it does focus on military stuff, but so does Military Times. So why do we need a federally funded newspaper? I don't know that we do. Number four, U.S. service member in stable condition after being wounded in Al-Shabaab attack in Somalia. Number five, Navajo Nation calls for an investigation into Fort Hood deaths. So no. The Navajo Nation has joined calls for an accounting of the deaths of Fort Hood at Fort Hood after one of its members became the latest soldier on the U.S. Army post to die this year. Private Carlton Chi, 25-year-old soldier from Pine Hill, New Mexico, died Wednesday after he collapsed following physical fitness training exercise 5 days earlier. The Navajo Nation Council praised Chi in a statement on Friday and urged the Army to thoroughly investigate his and the other soldiers' deaths. Quote, we are deeply disturbed at the string of deaths at Fort Hood, and if there is any malfeasance or negligence involved, the Navajo Nation calls on our national leaders to pursue every available avenue to protect the lives of our Navajo warriors and those serving in the U.S. Armed Forces. Speaker of the Council Seth Damon said it in a statement. Most of the deaths at Fort Hood have been violent deaths, murders, and then one was a suicide as a result of sexual trauma. And so, anyway, Fort Hood has been in the news consistently this past summer and earlier in the spring because of just the high rate of crime that's associated with Fort Hood. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do a little post-traumatic winning audio, some audio and video cuts. So anyway, by request. So you heard one from Elizabeth Smart earlier in this next little segment. I'll play a few of them that I do. So more of Auburn Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.